Welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. It's truth and reconciliation time. And it's very important business. Actually, it's a wonderful reminder. If you want to know what the British and Americans and the French have in store for all the world's peoples, take a good close look at the treatment of indigenous people, people of America. It's been an age-old project because the British and Americans basically won out in the battle between empires to control North America. They didn't get Mexico. They tried, but they didn't get it. The project that Winston Churchill called the Anglo-American Empire has been steadily and aggressively trying to shape the world. And it knows no bounds. It operates with impunity. When it does discuss little transgressions and errors and genocides and massacres, it pats itself on the back for being enlightened. We saw in Toronto a wonderful performer talking about what it means to have a land acknowledgement. And I still think that's the best commentary. Sorry, I can't tell you his name offhand. But it's a good backdrop to what I want to talk about. There's two major topics. Canada has been knocked sideways by issues. And it has, I suppose if you weren't here in Canada and you were living in Brazil, Mexico, India, China, Vietnam, you would say, there's really something rotten in the state of Denmark, which would stand in for Ottawa. And it's something we ought to address. Last week on the show, we talked about this episode where members of parliament, you know, we're soon now. Now, if anybody says parliament, everybody says, oh, golly, he's going to talk about that, because the world is aware of what happened. And the rationalizations are where we have to start now. We said last week that parliament should actually, every single member should resign. They should dissolve parliament and go home and face their constituents. And when they prove worthy of their forebears, the ones who fought Hitler, fought Nazism, and established the United Nations and the UN Charter, when they have done that, they can run for office again. And I'm so happy to say that we're talking about a bunch of lemmings who, if one stands up, they all stand up, no matter what was said, because they're like performing seals and they're following their leaders. And that includes the Bloc, that includes the NDP, that includes the Conservatives. You don't really, if you want to feel embarrassed for people, read all their silly rationalizations for why they stood up and applauded for someone who was introduced to them as a Ukrainian hero and a Canadian hero who had fought the Russians in World War II. Everyone heard, I assume they were listening. Maybe they're all looking at their phones. I don't know what these guys do. But at any rate, they were all there and he said that. And then they all leaped to their feet and applauded. And then, of course, the Speaker of the Parliament could not resist smiling on everybody and saying, "I'm so fortunate he's from my riding." And then they all leaped to their feet again. But anyway, let's just go to the point. People are trying to say, "Well, we didn't understand, you know, who he was. He told you who he was." I suppose you could say it's a great trick just to show how you can control a crowd because they follow each other around. But the problem is, he said he fought Russia in World War II. Now it's time to say, part of the history lesson, I would make it a little course that anyone who wants to be in Parliament has to know the following. Russia was the ally of Canada and the United States and the UK, France and China, in the war to defeat Nazism. Russia was an ally. They said, well, he was shooting at Russians. Well, let me tell you something about sportsmanship. If your fellow teammate is shot at by someone, you shoot the person shooting at your teammate. Russia was our teammate. And let's be really honest and point out that the Russians died in horrific numbers fighting that war against Nazi Germany. And the figures come up, it's just so staggering. I remember when John F. Kennedy told American people, you know, we should remember that 25 million Russians died in World War II. And we all stood around and claimed the victory. And they didn't tell us we couldn't because it was an alliance. Russians didn't mind that they didn't get special place. They were part of an alliance. Then they, together with the rest of the major states of the world at that time, formed the United Nations. They formed the United Nations before the end of World War II. They called themselves the United Nations. And they set up that body which respected all peoples of the earth as equal. A tremendous accomplishment for humanity. Now, coming back to the wonderful fellow that they all wanted to stand up for, and already people are, there are little notes in the Globe and Star and elsewhere of sympathy and understanding. Okay, let us not get confused. Yaroslav Honka and his admirers in Edmonton, or the nationalist Ukrainians, as they call themselves, when they say he was fighting Russia, let's just leave it right there. That means he was fighting Ukrainians. The most important detail that I have seen, now acknowledged by everybody, is that millions of Ukrainians fought alongside or were in the Soviet army. Some people call it the Red Army. Some call it the Russian Army. But this SS man who says he was fighting Russians was fighting Ukrainians. Ukrainians he was fighting. Why do I know that? Well, he was a member of the Waffen-SS under the command of Germans. And as I just said, and I would repeat over and over, millions of Ukrainians fought in the Russian army. The overwhelming majority of Ukrainians fought for Russia. He didn't want to do that. He was a part of this very small minority, localized largely in an area called Galicia. They fought for the Germans. They also fought the Poles, and they murdered the Poles, slaughtered the Poles. It's a crime. I don't know if he was involved, but Nuremberg said the SS, the Waffen-SS, was a criminal organization. They have the bodies to prove it. I've never seen any words from this gentleman about how sorry he is about that. He's really sorry about that. He's not. Instead, we're getting all kinds of malarkey to try and cover for the stupidity. And I have to say, what, fascist-loving prime minister and deputy prime minister? We're in a very sick situation, actually. You realize that we have, they call it a media mainstream. The mainstream is highly polluted. They are actually saying, you know what was really terrible is that after this wonderful gathering in Ottawa and the second day, by the way, he was in Toronto the next day before the shit hit the fan, if I pardon the expression. He had a 2-day visit, and it only emerged on the second day that a kind of a boo-boo had been created. But that moment should have been recognized. Well, first of all, it wasn't by the media, but the media said we should have apologized. We got to apologize right away to Ukraine. And we have to apologize, they said, to Ukrainian Canadians. And we have to apologize to Zelensky because poor little, green-shirted Zelensky, we put him in a bad spot. That's what they said. And the first thing to do is to apologize to Zelensky and Ukrainians. Here's a kind of interesting detail. The Ukrainians didn't ask for an apology. Zelensky hasn't even mentioned it. Somebody might say, well, he's covering for an old friend, or I don't know. But no, let's get to the essence. There are Waffen-SS people who live in Ukraine quite happily. There are streets in Kiev named after Nazi elements, those who allied with Nazi Germany. That's a fact. I'm not saying they're elected to the parliament. They probably are, but I don't know of any numbers. But the fact is that the groups that had supported and enlisted with the Nazis are not put down. They're allowed to take down monuments to Russia and to who was our ally. So in other words, if they take the monument down, they're taking the monument down of an ally who lost millions, helping Canada not be captured and defeated by Nazism. They do that. And Biden doesn't have a problem with that. Trudeau doesn't have a problem with it. We know Chrystia Freeland doesn't have a problem with it. We should have a problem with it. This is where the disgrace is. And let's talk about apologies. The ambassador of Poland said, we do not accept the whitewashing of an SS individual or SS organization, and an organization that killed Poles and Jews. He was very clear about that. And we expect an apology. Actually, I think the word might have been stronger than expect. And he didn't get an apology. What we got was what they call that in merchandising. It's a generic apology. Oh, that was bad. We feel terrible. That should never have happened. I want to apologize on behalf of the Canadian people to without being specific, the government of Poland asked for that into Jewish organizations. He didn't say Russians. The man said he was killing Russians, or at least his admirer said that. No apology to the Russians. There are Russian Canadians, you know. They're aware of who fought Hitler. This guy did not. But they didn't get an apology. Each organization should receive, in these states, in Belarusia, all should get an apology. Why? Because they were our allies. And we're remembering we were all together. So when he killed our ally or fought our ally, we didn't appreciate it. There's been a lot of whining over the years by organizations that said, oh, gee, the Russians got me, and Canada and US and those guys didn't protect me. And you say, well, tell me again who you were fighting for. Did you commit a crime on Russian soil or wherever they happened to capture you? You're going to have to answer to them. I told you at the beginning, Anglo-Saxon Empire. Our writ doesn't run there. We don't have any say. And if you decided to pick a fight with them, that's your problem. But we have a culture full of whining in groups that want to be applauded because at some point in their lives, they molested or burned or killed people that they called communists. They're really proud of themselves for that. So the disgrace goes there. There has not been a formal apology. Incidentally, the funny little story was that, and this is being handled by backroom people who must be running into the furniture by now, given the way they conduct themselves. They said in a diplomatic communication, they apologized. I think the message back from Zelensky would be, no problem. I have the Azov Brigade. I have people who make anti-Semitic comments and behavior publicly. And we do permit the naming of streets after people who killed you, who wanted to kill you, who liked serving under Hitler. So it's a charade, an embarrassing charade that this whole thing has happened. And I go back to the point. No member should be able to serve in Parliament until they can answer the question, who was Canada allied with in World War II? And also apologize to their constituents. Speaking to that larger issue, how did this happen? Well, I think two individuals who were in a lot of political trouble were sort of mutually boosting each other. Zelensky has problems. And all Biden says and all Trudeau say, we're with you. Well, they're not. I mean, sending a guy a few shells, that's not like sending your son. That's not like actually doing anything other than asking him to get himself killed. But so you had Trudeau had a problem because he had gone through this situation involving India, where he made a big noise in Ottawa, and in UK and US and the other guys who were Five Eyes guys sort of supported him, sort of, but he was starting to look kind of bad. India clearly indicated they're not in a compromising mood. They're not in a mood to try to prop him up and help him out because he accused them in a big public space. So he had a problem. He's got a problem. And he thought, this is going to be great. Part of his problem, as you know, is that he has trouble going around the country and being greeted by people who love him anymore. It seems to be kind of, that all has kind of worn away. And now, like all leaders who want to be pumped up and famous, they need crowds. They need scenes. They need somewhere to go to say, look at this. I'm rolling my sleeves up. I'm waving at the crowd. And I got a crowd. Well, the crowd, both in Parliament, you know, because there was people brought in and they were chanting. By the way, I haven't heard them, any of them say Slava Ukraina since. I'll tell you something. Slava Ukraina is the slogan of the of a particular nationalist army who also brags that it fought the Russians, which means they were our enemies. But they can do that, I guess. But when they chant, say that slogan, anybody familiar with the struggle against fascism knows that's not our slogan. It's not one we should repeat. I'm sorry that Mr. Zelensky decided to take it up. I think it's leading to his downfall, but that's his problem. It's definitely causing him problems. Poland doesn't really think much of him because that slogan has deadly, deadly consequences. And for Jews, by the way, Jews, Poles, Hungarians, we'll come to that. So Trudeau is going to have a crowd that he could be seen. He's Canada's leader. He's meeting the most famous leader in the world at the moment, the former comedian, now serious candidate to replace Churchill as the greatest figure, blah, blah. So the two of them were going to have that show together. And they stumbled and fell in a crap, but, or at least Trudeau did. But that's how I think that's what they were shooting for. And they just, you know, it was like one Banderite too far. They decided, let's put the cherry on the top. We'll introduce this fellow. And it blew up on him. But I think that's what the origin of the problem was. Trudeau looking for crowds, someplace where he can get a friendly backdrop, because he's wobbling, and it's clear. In his political situation. The Zelensky, we better talk about, and we'll take a break here in about 5 minutes, I think, about this. We've got things to say about India. Zelensky is portrayed here as a man who's fighting for freedom. But the fact is, Zelensky is where he is because he split, he participated, he didn't do it himself. He participated in Victoria Nuland's great plan to seize power in Kiev with the Maidan coup. They got that power in their hands. They had trouble wielding it because they were so clearly identified with one side of Ukraine. I remind you that Ukraine means borderland. And they can talk all they want. They can say they're Ukrainians, but you have to ask, oh, really, from what part of Ukraine do you come? Because it's a simple fact. Look at all the elections since World War II or before, if you want. You will find in Eastern Ukraine and in Crimea particularly, support for Russia. Historic. It's part of the DNA. They are not from the other side of the river. And that country is hard to rule. The only way it can be ruled democratically is if everybody's rights are protected and that they have mutual respect for each other. So when we hear the word, a very helpful word of describing the SS man, as being from a particular region, then we know that when he says he's Ukrainian, he's actually from Galicia. Galicia has, that's a region, and it's in Western Ukraine, and it has never been a comfortable region because it goes back to the Poles and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, and it goes to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And they've had different rulers. They are a distinct people, fairly distinct. They are not typical of or in step with the people of Eastern part of what we call Ukraine. Remember, it is a very large area. And its religious makeup, its linguistic makeup, cultural, is it's not intermixed somewhat, but clearly the part called Donbass and Crimea are the areas that are, if you want to, and people acknowledge they're Ukrainians. Well, they are Ukrainians who are not enamored of Galicians. And the SS knew what they were doing when they labeled it. They didn't say the Ukrainian SS. They said the Galician SS, because these were favorite people. So it's a divided country, hard to rule. It was ruled probably most effectively by a party called the Party of Regions, recognizing that it's a country of regions. Canada is rather like that. It's very difficult to rule Canada, because we have parts of the country are actually not very fond of each other. So you have to be careful. So if one part says, oh no, that's us, we're the Canadians, those other guys aren't, then you see blood in the eye of people. They want to know what you mean by that. That's the part we have to underline as well. So Zelensky's in trouble. Let me remind you, here's the good news, or news. Slovakia just elected a leader, says that he dates the problem in Ukraine to 2014, the Maidan coup, which he calls a fascist coup. This is the new leader. Look at your newspapers today. The new leader of Slovakia. The government of Poland has said they're going to stop military aid to Zelensky. They have a migraine problem. They mean our grain is being undermined by the import of Ukrainian grain, which Americans all want to boost that. And they say, well, what? Our farmers are supposed to starve because you have a special relationship to a guy from Western Ukraine who claims to rule the whole place. So, and Hungary has long since left the herd. Hungary has its own position. Start adding them up. And by the way, Zelensky was just in Washington. We got patted on the back and had his head rubbed, and Biden had his picture. But the United States Congress, in their emergency budget, stopped the aid to Ukraine. Don't worry, the tap will be turned on tomorrow morning. It's not really, but what it showed you is that the representatives of the people in these various states indicates they are tired of this situation. Say a couple of things here. One about, I want to ask when we're going to ever have a journalist in Canada, a journal, Globe, Star, CBC, I'm looking at you. Who would ask at this point of the number one person who knows all about Ukraine, speaks Ukrainian, is a local, well, everybody says she's very smart, which is ridiculous, but anyway, they say it. Chrystia Freeland, when she ran for office against Linda McQuaig, who, I'm sorry, the people didn't vote for Linda McQuaig, they were robbed. She gave interviews. She spoke to, when she got the vote, by the way, that was Bob Rae's writing. Bob Rae handed Rosedale to Chrystia Freeland. She lied about her grandfather and grandmother, but the father's the one who's on the payroll. Refugees, of course, from Russia. They were running, they fled. They were running from Russia. That's what they said. So that wasn't true. By the way, Linda Diebel was a CIUT regular, caffeine free. She used to come to our show when I was doing a 9 a.m. show with others. Andrew Van Velsen, and I can't remember the others. Anyhow, every Christmas she used to stop by, a really outstanding journalist from Sudbury who has died some years ago, an early death. She did a long interview with Christian. Christian said her grandparents were her inspiration, particularly her grandfather, who only identified as a refugee. Well, it emerged that her grandfather, Michael Chomiak, was a Nazi propagandist. He was in Krakow, Poland, as a journalist, editing Krakow News, I think it was called. The printing shop where the paper was printed had belonged to a Jewish owner, and that owner had that taken away from him and given to the people, along with Krzysztof Freeland's grandfather, to do Nazi propaganda, war propaganda. And he also lost his home. Krzysztof Freeland's father was given a home. I'm not sure it was the home of the Jewish owner. I suspect it was. And the owner went to his death. That's an ugly fact. If it's not a fact, I would like Christian to help us all with the information. He, not only do we know he was the editor because he took all of his papers and put them in a library in Edmonton because he was proud of it after the war. He, together with a lot of really wonderful people, were allowed in. And he kept his papers because, I tell you, I think like Christian and like the people, like the old Confederacy, he thought the South is going to rise again. And that appears to be what is happening. They have a dream, the old dream, and they're going to rule the roost. And they thought, we're going to go with this war and we're going to push Russia. We're going to crush people of Donbass because we can do it. We can kill our own citizens because they're too Russian for us. So we go ahead and kill them or push them out, chase them out, and we'll take over. So she's living grandpa's dream. At least that's how it looks. And I go back. Where is the reporter in Canada? Well, just ask her, is it true? And immediately all the hacks and morons and really slimy people put arguments in her mouth. They say, well, she didn't do any of that. That's got nothing to do with her. I absolutely agree. But she is the granddaughter, and she said he was her hero, or somebody she supported. But she never told us whether or not he was a Nazi, or a Nazi collaborator, or the editor of the Krakow News, which advocated the annihilation of Jews. That's, it did advocate that. It also supported the war effort against Canada. If a Canadian ship was sunk, they said, hooray. That's her grandfather. No reporter in Canada has ever asked her. One time, when it first broke, the news that someone, a journalist, I think the Ottawa Citizen, said, there are reports that your grandfather, blah, blah, he was a collaborator. And she said, we should not listen to Russian disinformation. And you saw this one where what line did Trudeau have when he got caught in something which showed that he is either totally incompetent in running the place, because you have a visiting president and a Nazi shows up and you say, well, that's a bureaucratic problem. And he says, we have to push back against Russian propaganda. The exact disinformation, the exact same line that she used. And nobody was permitted to follow up saying, well, okay, you say it's disinformation. So what part of it is not true? Instead, they all bit their tongues. And to this moment, they haven't changed. They are all still like, what do you call it? The three blind mice? I don't know. There is some kind of institutional decision that the deputy minister who told the world that her grandpa was a refugee and therefore she has a little refugee poor me story was actually a Nazi, just like Mr. Humke was a guy who fought the Russians, except he was SS. So I don't want to give her a hard time, but I'd like a reporter to give her a hard time. Just answer, really, it doesn't fall on her. He committed the crime as far as I'm concerned, and they were crimes. But why did she, so far, she seems to have misrepresented him. If she wants to come out and heroically defend him, and by the way, she'd have a lot of allies, I guarantee. I think there was a big section would come and say, she's right. Why are you picking on her grandfather for her? You know, it's just a newspaper. Well, at any rate, that ought to be settled. So to repeat one last time, we were allied with Russia in the Second World War. Russia paid the highest price for the victory. And in the Russian army, it was called Soviet Army, Red Army, were millions of Ukrainians. And Mr. Humke was fighting Ukrainians. And he calls them Russians, but the Ukrainians were with the Russians. His minority was with Germany, and Hitler made his choice. That's okay. By the way, I don't care if they arrest him. I'm not interested in any of that. Let's just get the facts straight. And nobody should be allowed to serve in Parliament who doesn't know what happened in World War II. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Take a break and we'll come back.